Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the September 2nd edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Report shows Arthur, VG, Oakland schools in top U.S. rankings. Three area high schools, Arthur, Villa Grove, and Oakland, are among the top 25 schools in the region on U.S. News & World Report's newest Best High Schools rankings, which measure academic performance and college readiness at high schools nationwide. Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond High School ranked 409th among Illinois high schools and 12,070th in nationally placed 21st place in the regional list. Villa Grove High School ranked 423rd in the state and 12,330th nationally, ranking 23rd regionally. Oakland High School ranked 433rd in the state and 12,699th nationally, ranking 24th regionally. Urbana University High School topped the regional list, ranking 7th among Illinois high schools and 167th nationally. In all, 25 area high schools were included on the national list, with most falling in the state's 100th to 400th range. U.S. News bases its best high schools ranking on six weighted measures: college readiness, 30%, based on student participation and performance in advanced placement and other college-level coursework; state assessment proficiency, 20%; state assessment performance relative to expectations, 20%; breadth of college-level curriculum offered, 10%; performance of historically underserved student groups, 10%; and graduation rate, 10%. Stephanie Siegmiller, principal of Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond High School, said the ranking reflects the work of teachers and staff there. "I'm proud of this recognition, but I'm even more proud of the people behind it," Siegmiller said. "Our teachers and staff come to work every day believing in our students, building relationships, holding them to high expectations, and doing the work to help them succeed. This recognition is a reflection of the people who are in the trenches with our students every single day." U.S. News published the full list of ranked high schools along with details in its ranking methodology at usnews.com. The next article, petitions now available for Arthur Village. Residents of the Village of Arthur wishing to become candidates for municipal office in the April 6, 2027 election may pick up their candidate petition sheets beginning August 25th. Offices up for election are three: a four-year term village trustee seats and one two-year term village trustee seat. Petitions are to be picked up at the village office located at 120 East Progress Street. Office hours are Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 3:30 p.m. The filing period for petitions is November 16th through November 23rd. On the final day of the filing period, November 23rd, they will accept petitions until 5 p.m. To qualify as a candidate, you must be a registered voter, must not have convicted in any court located in the United States of a felony crime, and meet the one-year residency requirement prior to the election date of April 6, 2027. The next article, Arthur's Legacy of Love to hold open house September 12th by Marty Yackel. The Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation invites the community to an open house on Saturday, September 12th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the nearly completed second CILA, Community Living Integrated Arrangement House, located at 512 North Beach Street in Arthur. This is also an opportunity for people to get out and see what they have invested in over the last several years. The ALOLF has been overwhelmed by the blessings from this community. Dave Allen, who is the member of the Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation board, shared information about the open house. He noted that board members will be available at the open house to provide guided tours and answer questions regarding the board's vision to provide quality housing for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The home is made possible through the support and love of hundreds of contributors from the Arthur community, Central Illinois, and many other states. Allen gave a special nod to Midwest Heritage Construction for their invaluable leadership and expertise. "They have been the cornerstone," he said. "They've been the quarterback in the construction process, making sure that things get done at the appropriate time." The Moultrie County Beacon, MCB, which manages the day-to-day operations of the Sila houses, will also have staff on hand. They will discuss employment opportunities for anyone interested in employment at the CILA house. They will also share insights and answers questions for families on topics such as who is eligible for living in CILA housing and what a typical CILA house structure and activities look like. The second home will open when all certification is done with the state and qualified residents are ready to move in. To help stock the home, tables featuring a wish list of needed items will be displayed in the garage for anyone wishing to participate in a house shower. Board members strongly encourage area families who may need CILA services now or in the future to stop by the CILA house on September 12th. Planning and paperwork through Prairieland Services indicator it can take years, making it vital to start the process early to ensure your family is prepared for future circumstances. Allen stressed the importance of starting the process sooner rather than later, as one never knows when something may happen. He stated, "It's important to be proactive. Circumstances can change quickly, and we never won't know what tomorrow may bring. A death in the family of a caregiver or an unforeseen emergency can change your life. Starting the process is an insurance policy of sorts for those who have children with mental, physical, or developmental disabilities. Even if you are unsure if your family will ever need these services, it's critical to be prepared. We invite you to come interact with the board members and other families and see what the combined prayers, encouragement, and financial support of our community has accomplished and made available to our families. A community integrated living arrangement, CILA, home is an option for a young adult who may be ready for independence and have a desire to be on their own, a place where they can be with friends and be in a neighborhood, yet stay close to family and friends. We encourage families to come and interact and learn what they need to do to be prepared and the resources we have to help them deal with common challenges shared with special people in our lives. The second house is set up very much like the first Legacy of Love home on the corner of Beach and Second, with a few changes made by suggestions and input from current house managers. The newer home has private bathrooms for the staff, and one of the rooms has a handicap lift installed. Also, both homes now have generators as power outages this summer caused some challenging disruptions for the residents and staff of the current home. Arthur Legacy of Love Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization working to generate funds to help build quality CILA housing for citizens of the Arthur community with intellectual and developmental disabilities. For those who wish to contribute to the mission, donations can be made to the account at the State Bank of Arthur or online at www.arthurlegacyoflovefoundation.com or by mailing a check payable to ALOLF to Post Office Box 222, Arthur, Illinois 61911. The ALOLF board members share their hope that God may be glorified as we continue the mission to care for and provide opportunities for our citizens with special needs as we work together for the betterment of our community. Board members of the foundation are Dave and Kathy Allen, Howard and Judy Diener, Lloyd and Judy Gingrich, Melvin and Clara Helmuth, Dwayne and Clara Helmuth, Dwayne and Irene Coons, Joe and Rosanna Mast, Bruce and Kathy Oye, Charlie and Casey Oye, and Joe and Martha Yoder. We'll move now to the obituaries. Jacqueline Lee, Jackie Sykes, 67 of Arcola, passed away at 4:23 a.m. on Saturday, August 29, 2026, at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis. Private funeral services will be held. Burial will be in the Arcola Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. Harold Lee Bradford, 91 of Hinsborough, passed away at 7:10 p.m. on Tuesday, August 25, 2026, at the Villa House in St. Louis, Missouri, with his family by his side. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, September 4th, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, September 5th, in the Union Cemetery in Hinesboro. Sherry Jo Parker Krause, 78 of Arcola, passed away at 10:46 a.m. on Tuesday, August 27, 2026, after a short stay at Stillwater Senior Living in Edwardsville. Private family services will be held with the burial at Westlawn Memorial Park Cemetery in Newton. The next article, author adds new chapters to Tuscola, a memoir, Legacies and the Future by Joseph Caldwell. Editor's note, Tuscola native Joel Caldwell has published 9 books, including Tuscola, a memoir, Place, Time, and Meaning of My Hometown. He's working on new chapters for a revised edition. This is the second new chapter from the perspective of fictional Benjamin. I have almost reached my time when I know how my fictional Benjamin felt. I'm quite close to entering my 9th decade, and I can envision a newborn Tusculian arrive. There is no longer a Jarman hospital, nor are there many births occurring at home with a midwife. Benjamin watched over my entrance. For the future, I will watch over someone else's new. Life continues as it had for millennia, and I am ready to pass the torch. I want to express a wish for the future. What shall I say or wish? As Benjamin did for me, I'll pick a newborn to tell my story to. She may be named already, but I will call her Mariposa, Mari for short. I think about how Mari will carry forward the legacy Benjamin and I have left. Mari may not stay in Tuscola her whole life like Benjamin. She might eventually leave, as I did, carrying with me the values of my hometown, Tuscola. Tuscola is still a small town surrounded by corn and bean fields. Some small family farms remain, but corporate farming is claiming them yearly. I feel it is not a close-knit community that I was part of, but it still has what I call hometown values. It seems to be turning into a bedroom community for Champaign-Urbana. If it does, Mari will need to work harder to keep it as a genuine hometown. I feel the future is up to all the Mariposas and Nancy's and Charlene's. We white men have mismanaged many aspects of society in general, and it's time and for change. I hope that writing my wishes and arranging to have them delivered to her when she is old enough to understand will serve her well. Maori, you're the product of a line of old-fashioned values. It seems lately that society has lost a lot of those. You will learn that in a small town, you will feel you belong. This feeling is often referred to as a sense of place. You'll be influenced by the future town and surrounded by surrounding community, its businesses and owners, churches and ministers, schools and teachers, and the extreme hot summers and cold winters. Throw in a tornado or two, fierce summer thunderstorms and blizzards with freezing rain. History and the feeling of self-sufficiency will make you feel you belong in this place. You will grow to love the flatness, the horizon stretching to the sky, the sunsets and cicadas, the tree-lined streets, the large shade trees that I collected leaves for Miss Deer's biology class, the Victorian-era homes with large yards, flower gardens, wraparound porches will all grow on you, and later you will think back on your childhood as I did and as Benjamin did before me. You'll hold onto the memories no matter how the rest of the world behaves. We all learned a long time ago to trust the words of our elders and especially our teachers. A person's word and a handshake will be as strong as a written contract. You will tell the truth, be compassionate, and value the feelings of others. You and your neighbors will take care of each other and treat everyone equally. Even when they might be equality in income or monetary worth, intelligence or common sense, even in kindness, you value the opinions of all. That is your objective. Sometimes this will be a challenge, but you will succeed. This is the essence of hometown community. You may leave Tuscola. I did. I longed for mountains and canyons, wide open places, and settled in the West. But I took with me the Tuscola values that were instilled in me in those first 2 decades when I was seeking and learning about life. You too will be seeking for answers, and even what questions to ask. You will want to know how you came to be here, who and what came before you. You won't solve all of the problems you face, nor will you find any answers to many questions. Seek out your most trusted elders for assistance. You will have more challenges since your world will be so different from mine. You can meet the challenge. Technology will continue to change, and you will have conveniences and tools Benjamin and I never had. Technology is useful to improve lives. It is not for achieving superiority or control. Humanity in our communities perseveres through the ages, becoming more important as we age and mature. Trust your instincts. In your early decades, learn to resist peer pressure. Diversity is critical to learning and happiness. It's okay if you are a little bit different or a lot. During my years in Tuscola, the community was mostly white. I knew only one person of color in town. It wasn't always this way. In the 1890s, Tuscola was known throughout central Illinois for the Colored Folks Cakewalk Dance Festival during the Christmas season, and Benjamin could have known Harold Bridgewater and his family, a star athlete in the Tuscola schools. Harold was also known for his singing, tap dancing, bass fiddle, and 2 decades as a radio announcer. For Benjamin, history was ongoing. He knew many names that I recognized in my time. They were ancestors who continued the Tuscola story. Manwaring ran a boot store. Hackleman ran a grocery store. Marler had a painting and papering business. Hackett ran a lumber yard. I know descendants of all these people. Benjamin knew the Irvins and Madisons, Wardle of the Beach House, and Hop Long, the Chinese laundryman. The number and diversity of businesses on West North Central, 2 blocks from my house, was a marvel. Johnson's Jewelry Store, Wardell and Miller's Dry Goods, and Bruin's Planning Mill. And of course, the large Star Store at the corner of Main and North Central. My mother worked there in my time. It housed carpenter's clothing, and my mother worked there too. The Madison Opera House stood where the community building was constructed during my time. Tuscola National Bank was founded and run by Helms in 1890. On Sales Street, businesses that Benjamin and I both knew, such as the Strand Theater and the Candy Kitchen, we knew it later as Gus's reconstructed as Flusser Candy Kitchen, will be unknown to you. You'll have to study old books and newspapers to learn their stories and how they fit into the community. I regret not learning more about the history that came before me, as I was part of an ongoing story which will continue with you. You will become part of history. Little Mari, there is so much more I could tell you about what I've learned and what a hometown like Tuscola has taught me. With the values that Benjamin and I had, you too will learn, and you will succeed. Fly with the spring breezes and embrace diversity and compassion and perseverance and challenges. Benjamin and Maria are not the beginning nor the end. How I wish I could spend more time with them. They are a continuum of history with me sandwiched between. The next article, Mennonite Relief Sale Continues Tradition of Giving, tops 2025's total. The 64th annual Arthur Mennonite Relief Sale once again demonstrated the generosity of the Arthur area community and beyond, raising $140,500 during the 2-day event held Friday evening and Saturday at the Auto Center. The 2026 total surpassed last year's $139,000, according to relief sale committee officials. The event drew a large crowd with visitors traveling throughout Illinois and several other states to attend the annual sale. After expenses are paid, 20% of the proceeds will remain in the local community, where churches and ministries will use the funds to help meet needs in Arthur and surrounding communities. The remaining 80% will go to Mennonite Central Committee, MCC, which provides assistance around the world, including food, water, shelter, and other necessities. The generosity of this community, the hard work of the volunteers, and the many people who came out to support the sale all contributed to a successful 2026 relief sale, Relief Sale Board Presidents Glenn and Rhonda Rhodes said. We pray the funds raised will help many people locally and around the world in the name of Jesus. Area businesses, woodworking shops, churches, and individuals who contributed furniture, quilt, and numerous other items for the auction and silent auction. Among the highlights of Saturday's auction was this year's featured quilt, Argyle Bargello, donated by Pleasant View Church, which sold for $1,500. Several pieces of furniture and other large items also generated strong bidding. A six-piece bedroom suite brought $6,300, while a mission-style table with six chairs sold for $3,600. A deluxe sewing cabinet brought $1,800. Other auction highlights included a 10-by-12-foot storage building that sold for $4,500 and a VersaDump trailer that brought $2,000. One of the most memorable moments came the weekend during a special fundraiser benefiting Legacy of Love. Dave Allen spoke to those attending about the ministry and introduced several of its residents. Following his presentation, bidders were invited to raise their numbers, with each bid representing a $50 donation to Legacy of Love. Many participants raised their numbers more than once. By the time the giving concluded, $5,100 had been raised for the ministry. One highlight of the sale was hearing Dave Allen speak about Legacy of Love. Then he introduced some of the residents, and when he was finished, just seeing the amount of bidder numbers raised to help this ministry was so amazing and overwhelming, Rhodes said. Food continued to be one of the relief sale's largest attraction. Friday evening, featuring a pulled pork dinner along with Pedro Food Booth, a lunch stand with soft-serve ice cream. Saturday began with the pancake and sausage breakfast, followed later in the day by butterfly pork chops and a grilled chicken dinner. A popular selection of homemade baked goods was also available throughout the weekend. Women from area Amish churches prepared homemade donuts, tea rings, cinnamon rolls, fried pies, cookies, cakes, breads, noodles, and other items. The relief sale also maintained its tradition of offering something for all ages. Children enjoyed barrel train rides and a petting zoo, while a special Saturday morning children's auction featured toys, games, and books. Members of the 2026 Relief Sales Committee were Glenn and Rhonda Rhodes, presidents, Ezra and Linda Schrock, secretary, Noah Yoder, treasurer, Stan and Dorothy Helmuth, Lamar and Nadine Miller, Paul and Clara Clark, and Al and Betty Helmuth. With another successful sale complete, the money raised will extend the impact well beyond the Arthur community, helping neighbors close to home while also providing assistance to people in need around the world. The next article, Who Destroyed Grandma's Recipe? I'm Just Saying, by Mike Carroll. I admit I grew up at a time and place when and where a gourmet was anyone who insisted that all the chicken feathers were plucked before cooking. I was not a gourmet. Growing up in Tuscola during the late 40s and early 50s, my palate centered on fried food, mayonnaise, and donuts. Anything else I ate was junk food. Those days of grandma's finger-licking good cooking seem long gone. For example, I just read a magazine, Chicago's 50 Best Restaurant, was totally stumped by what they were talking about. Was it food? I'll give you some examples. Coming in rated at number 42 was Omakase Box Sushi, featuring plush Otoro Sweet, Hokkaido, uni bites, a billfish, and sea robin, $100 to $200 per couple. What? Seriously? Rated number 21 was Creepies, Funny French. Who could have imagined that jammy eggs drenched in runny pools of green and red mayonnaise could bring so much joy, $100 to $200 per couple. Runny pools of green and red mayonnaise doesn't speak to my palate. When my mayonnaise turns red or green, I throw it away, and so should you. This stuff is so foreign to me. In the early 50s, the perfect meal at home was Sunday lunch after church. It was one day we got expensive meat, either chicken or pork chops, fried in some white lard, crackling good. There were proper peeled mashed potatoes. Taters are meant to be peeled in all forms. Today, restaurants don't peel them, saying the healthy part is in the skin. Bologna, the bean counters saving money by laying off peelers. There was proper gravy, flour, milk, and the grease, and cracklings from the chicken or chops. It was poured over the taters, the pork chops, and the corn and the bread, upgraded to biscuits if Dad got any overtime at DeKalb Seed that week. I lived for Sunday and will tell the Lord that when I see him at my trial. Over the next 5 decades, when eating out, especially in cities, I increasingly had no idea what they were serving. Here's another top 50 restaurant in Chicago that might give you a taste of what I'm talking about. Rated number 10 is Monteverde, a specialty featured cacio e pepe, a gorgeous plate of celeriac ravioli with rabbit ragu, $100 to $200 per couple. Is this food and e pepe? What did Pepe do this time? And the celeriac ravioli with rabbit ragu? I mean, sure, I ate rabbits. Dad shot down during the town dump, but Dad evidently missed when the ragu scampered away. Is number 22 rated Indien? A featured dish is dukola, a savory steamed chickpea sponge cake, scallops, kafril in a spicy Goan paste with caviar or a gourmet version of chicken makhani, served along rich black lentil dal and garlic naan, still steamed from the tandoor. $200 to $300 per couple. I've actually had this dish, except for the spicy Goan paste, I substitute ketchup. I remember the waiter screwing up his face and squeaking, "Katsup!" Also, my rich black lentil dal and garlic naan came steaming from the side door, and not the tandoor. By the way, where is the tandoor? One problem for me is these fancy restaurants is they're growing up in small town head. My lunch was very simple, usually involving a single slice of highly processed white bread with all the nutrients pounded out of it. Sunbeam was our favorite, but with also being a sponsor of Sheriff Sid and those wild buckaroos on Channel 3 in the mid-50s. I had many variations, a bread and butter sandwich, a bread and butter and sugar sandwich, a bread and ketchup sandwich, a bread and mayonnaise sandwich, with bologna if we had any, bread and jelly, etc. My sis liked bread and sliced bananas with mayo and chopped nuts. Made me almost throw up. Our gourmet version of this white bread snack was to first toast the bread. We both lived on the dangerous, raffish edge of food experimentation. Back to Chicago's top restaurant. There's a number 3 rated Kyoshin Sushi. Firefly squid or creamy orbs of fried pufferfish milt and the sweetest monkfish liver you will ever try, over $300 per couple. In the 50s, we caught a lot of fish down at the dredge ditch during hard times, carp, catfish, canned tuna, Mrs. Paul's frozen fish sticks, but never any pufferfish or monkfish. By the way, my favorite fried fish dish remains Long John Silver's deep fried whatever it is, but if it came with creamy orbs of milt, then unless those fancy pants are words for hush puppies, I don't think I've ever had the pleasure. Depressingly, the top 50 didn't include any hamburger joints or mention mashed potatoes or gravy or corn or fruit jello. And where were the three greatest eateries in downtown Chicago? Gino's Pizza East, White Castle, and Garrett Popcorn Shop. Thinking back to President Obama's first campaign in the Iowa primary in 2008, I should have seen the food worm turning then. Obama, Chicago sophisticate, was trying to act all folksy with Iowa farmers when he said, "Where do you guys get your arugula?" They screwed up their faces into joint confusion, and one farmer finally squeaked, "Gagagula?" Forget Chicago gourmets. It's always been simple food for me. High carb and deep fat. Recipes for my favorite down-home cooking dishes will soon be featured in my new cookbook, Simple Food to Die For. The next article, Nightly Prayers. So There I Was by Pete Buckley. Each night before I go to sleep, I complete my daily ritual of whispering my prayers to God. As a child, I often said these prayers while kneeling next to my bed, but sheepishly admit that nowadays I say my prayers from the comfort of my bed, covered in blankets, with my arm wrapped around my pillow. My dad would tell me that prayers that said while kneeling reach God faster than those said when in other positions, but I've grown lazy over the years, and I'm patient enough to endure the wait. I start my evening prayers the same sentence every day. Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Guide us in your way. And then I meander one of those dozen possibilities. As a Catholic, my daily prayer usually includes the Our Father and the Hail Mary, but like a good baseball coach, I'll occasionally switch up my prayer lineup at times, and I might add a prayer to St. Michael the Archangel or recite a prayer I learned about my guardian angel. But most nights I like to repeat the same words that are said each Sunday at Mass. The prayer is called Confiteor, the Latin word for confess. The Confiteor is a prayer that the entire congregation says in unison, which states in part the following. I confess to Almighty God and to you, my brothers and sisters, that I have sinned through my own fault in my thoughts and in my words and what I have done and what I have failed to do. The prayer continues, but the part of the prayer that I focus on is what I say when I have sinned by what I have failed to do. Believe me, when I say there is plenty I should have done for others that I haven't. In my nightly prayer to God, I always ask requests for Him for watch over my wife and my children and my grandchildren, as well as my other relatives. I'll actually name my wife, kids, brothers, and sisters to include my family's family members. But when I get past those names, I merely add the words, and everyone else, which includes people like the guy at the busy street intersection in Champaign who held up the sign that says, "Help." Sometimes I will ask God to look after those who have died, like my mom and my dad and my in-laws and aunts and uncles and grandparents. But I admit that that is not always the case. However, I do remember each night to list the names of those who I know to be sick or suffering, and the list is sadly too long. While praying for the sick, I will ask God to remove their pain and their miseries and to please heal their injuries and illnesses. I'm not sure how long it takes for me to say my nightly prayers, but I will admit that on more than one occasion I've fallen asleep before finishing them every night. I often think that God is surely too busy listening to more important requests that my pleas on behalf of my family and friends to be happy and healthy. But then I remember that God has a pretty good reputation for listening to everyone, even to a guy like me. In the next article, Spinning the Nightly Wheel of Misfortune by Ramblin' Man David Porter. One of the fun and fascinating things about growing into the gray age is never knowing from day to day what part of your body is going to rebel. It's like waking up every morning in a game show called Where Do I Ache Today? We should develop odds for us old people so that we can at least wager on our own discomfort. You might think I'd have the inside track, bet on my own pain, but if you knew the night before where you're going to hurt tomorrow, where's the fun in that? Maybe there could be a series of wheels we could spin. Category one is a type of pain. Does it burn, bruise, bleed, or blister? Then we speed. Where? Wheel. Arms, legs, torso, hands, or feet? Is it external or internal pain? Where does the pain fall on the Richter scale? If our combined spins accurately predict tomorrow's aches and pains, we should get a free Medicare for a year or a new car. If we knew where these bumps and bruises came from, we might be able to prevent them. I can't remember where I set my glasses down. Do you think I remember where I smack my elbow? Sometimes I have a pretty good idea why my back aches or my legs are sore. It usually has something to do with the physical work the day before, and that is why I try to avoid physical work. Other times, it's not clear at all. You just wake up with it. It's awfully hard to sprain your arm in your sleep, but I've done it. Today's malady is on my shoulder. I thought it was just a patch of dry skin, but today it looks more like a friction burn. We're all familiar with rug burns, even though the days of earning them are long, long gone. That's what it looks like, a rug burn. I don't remember skidding shoulder first into a rug lately, or hoisting anything heavy. I don't shoulder enough responsibility to leave a mark. It's just one of those great geriatric mysteries. I'll spin the wheel of a fortune again tonight and see what tomorrow brings. In the article, Follow Dolly's Path and Share a Smile, Just Saying by Doris Elmore. Remembering Dolly, it's difficult to say goodbye to an icon. I'm just saying that the death of Dolly Parton has been a shock to all of us. From all I have read recently, she was having health problems, but I didn't realize how serious. Since her death, I've been reading several stories that have been posted on FB. The problem is, how do you know what's true and what's false? I do believe all the posts about her love and caring personality are true. Dolly Parton and Porter Wagoner performed a memorable Grand Ole Opry-style show in 1971 at Millikan University. We were fortunate to see them with my sister and husband, Donna and Orv Graham. She was a young Dolly at that time, and they were great. As almost everyone knows, Dolly grew up in a poor family with many siblings, but they were probably happier than people that grew up in rich families. The video of all the families singing together was so great. You can try to imagine what their family life was like. Simple means, but laughing and singing, loving and caring. So many people are upset after hearing of her death, like they lost a good friend. And to tell you the truth, I think it feels that way. She was the type of person who was everybody's friend, whether they had met her or not. The many performances she has done and songs she has written are endless. Dolly's Imagination Library started in 1995, and remember her father, who never learned to read or write, and it's fantastic. Our granddaughter Alyssa was fortunate to receive Dolly's books up until she was five. They aren't cheap books. They are hardbound and so entertaining. Our son said that he thinks it was helpful to Alyssa learning to read and expand her imagination. They were given a paper when she was born to sign up for the books. I have a small video of Alyssa trying to read, Brown Bear, Brown Bear. It was so cute because she could barely talk at the time, but it sounded like she was trying to say Brown Bear. Some of the other books include Llama Llama Red Pajama, Llama Llama Learn to Share, Dolly Parton I'm a Rainbow, and Goodnight Gorilla. This is just a few of the many books she received in the 5 years. She looked forward to a book each month. Now that she's older, the books are packed away in a tub waiting for another child to enjoy them. They live in Tennessee, but they're available to all children. Dolly Parton has helped people, especially children, all over the world. What a legacy she leaves and people will enjoy for a lifetime. The movies she starred in, Steel Magnolias, 9 to 5, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and more were great. According to Siri, there were 10 movies. I've seen the ones I mentioned more than once and enjoyed them each time. Dolly Parton was like a breath of fresh air. Her laugh, her smile, her love for others was catching. When you saw her, you just automatically smiled or laughed. It'll continue. It won't go away. We visited Dollywood several years ago, and we had a great time until it rained. But even then, we were in this little country store in Dollywood, and it was entertaining. Once the rain stopped, we were off sightseeing once again. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.